Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for December 7th, 2011. A special edition of Security Wire Weekly focused on mobile security issues. In this edition, we bring you three experts to talk about mobile security and some of the threats and technologies available to protect against them. James Lyne of Sophos joins us.
These devices, mobiles and tablets, haven't yet become the high-value target that the PC is. We're really, really close.
Then Andrew Jakewith of Perimeter East Security joins us.
I think we're going to see a situation where iOS becomes the Mac from the standpoint of being a relatively secure oasis, you know, tranquil, nice neighborhood, not very crowded, white picket fences, safe for kids, and Android, which is going to be a lot more like Windows, you know, Wild West problems, malware of different types.
And finally, Chris Weiss-Opel of Veracode.
That people say, well, I don't really see what the attacks will be, doesn't mean that they should just be lackadaisical about putting any kind of data on these devices and not thinking about security.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt. Part of our Spotlight series focused on mobile security in December, we decided to bring you several experts to sound off on some of the security issues that we've been hearing about in 2011. Everything from mobile malware, vulnerabilities, and other threats are rising as a result of increased use of smartphones, and those problems are coming to an enterprise near you. Well, up first is Chris Weiss-Opel of Veracode. Talks about a recent study that Veracode did that looked at Android applications. He also talks about some of the various security technologies within the mobile platforms that make them pretty secure and some of their weaknesses.
With Android, we found that the number one risk was hard-coded cryptographic keys in the application. So that's a case where everyone who has the application installed is using the same crypto key, which is sort of like everyone in the organization using the same password to secure their data, which means that basically if someone loses their phone and someone gets access to that application, then, you know, they can basically get access to all the data that everyone in the organization can. And I should preface this by saying most of the Android analysis we do is on enterprise apps, not consumer apps. Most of these apps are finance or healthcare, sales, other types of enterprise applications, and they're typically used by employees of that company.
Why would a mobile developer hard code cryptographic keys into a mobile app?
It's basically for ease of development. They don't need to reinvent their authentication system when they move to a mobile. They're not typically writing a from scratch system. What they're doing is they're building a new thick client for an older system, which was probably client server and then became web and is now mobile. And the problem is, once we actually find this a lot in web applications running on the server side, where the server is authenticating to back end data sources with a crypto key that's embedded in the app. And we actually find that 17% of the time in web apps. But the risk there is not nearly as high because, no one has access to that web server to get the binary off that server except people like the admins who are running the server. With mobile, everyone has access to the software with the key in it. So it just becomes a much riskier problem.
In your experience, are you finding that the developers that are tied to many of these mobile apps, and I know we're just talking about enterprise mobile apps, but I mean, are some of these developers maybe less skilled and more in it for the profit?
Well, I would say that everyone is less skilled with developing mobile apps because it's only been around for a few years. We see a lot of these apps are developed by, mobile app development shops. So even though a company might have a mature development team that does J2EE, Java web apps, or .NET web apps, they don't have any expertise inside. So they go outside and they outsource the development of these mobile apps. And so that's typically the development model, and they're built much more quickly. We have customers who tell us that they actually build a mobile app in 2 weeks. So a lot of security thinking isn't going into this development.
Are you seeing any indication that the threat landscape is changing? I mean, we get so much vendor noise about mobile right now, and it sounds like, you know, we're only a couple of months away from the RSA conference. It sounds like it's going to be mobile, mobile, mobile all the time there. Is there any indication that, you know, attacks will change from attacking web applications, you know, in the browser on the desktop versus moving to mobile devices?
Sure. So it's funny you say that, because at the RSA I'm giving a presentation on mobile security. So I guess I'll be one of those. They'll probably have a mobile security track. I think it's definitely moving in that direction. You know, I'm going to show my age again here and said I started doing my vulnerability research on web applications back in like 1996. And before then, no one had done anything in web applications. Doesn't mean web applications didn't exist. It just meant for the first few years, we didn't really understand what the risks were. Cross-site scripting was an unknown. SQL injection was an unknown. And so it takes a few years for people to understand how, you know, what are the new risks of the platform? How are they going to be attacked? And I think we're, you know, researchers are ramping up that curve faster now. We're doing a lot of research here than we did on the web. I think it probably took a good 5 years to understand what the implications of a web application were. And, of course, we still haven't fixed some of these core problems. You know, in 2000, we knew what SQL injection and cross-site scripting were, and here we are 11 years later. So I think it will take a few years to understand how these attacks are going to occur and how we can prevent them. The fact that people say, well, I don't really see what the attacks will be, doesn't mean that they should just be lackadaisical about putting any kind of data on these devices and not thinking about security. So, you know, just to take the example of the cryptographic keys, you know, just to say, well, I don't know a way that an attacker would grab that cryptographic key is kind of a poor excuse to put it on there, because we know it adds a lot of risk to the system. And I can imagine, you know, people writing, you know, if there was some valuable stuff protected by those keys, like, say, you know, financial transactions, I can tell you attackers will figure out how to get at them on the mobile platform. It's not, you know, a perfectly secure platform. So even though we don't know everything about how it's going to get attacked, we can still be prudent about how we're building, you know, applications with what we know today.
Do you agree, though, that there is a plus with the way the mobile platforms have been built at this point, you know, in terms of the sandboxing and some other security technologies that have been kind of built right into the platforms themselves?
Yeah, I think that there's been some capabilities that are nice. You know, the code signing is good. It doesn't mean the code is secure or not malicious, but at least you know what code was signed by the platform maker. Mm-hmm. It all goes into what goes into determining whether something should be signed or not. So, you know, that's a start. The sandboxing is good, that different apps can't access data that other apps, if they're written securely. Certainly apps can write data and share data across interfaces if they're not written securely. So those are framework pieces that are there that can be used by developers. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are. The permission model that's there, where different apps have to seek permission to, say, for location or to talk over the SMS channel or to talk over the network, that's all good. But in practice, users allow any permissions on the apps they run. If it's Angry Birds and it says, I need to know your GPS location to play this game, they're going to say, okay, mm-hmm. right? Or if it's, I need access to your data store, they're going to say, okay.
Right.
So I think a lot of these things are good conceptually, but in practice, it falls down because there's not a good enforcement framework around a lot of them.
That was Chris Weisopel of Veracode. Up next, Andrew Jaquith of Perimeter East Security joins us. In this excerpt from our Security Squad podcast, Andrew shares his view on mobile security.
You know, on the Apple platform, you definitely have seen some security issues. And I think that's really just has to do with the fact that it's, comparatively speaking, still a relatively young platform. You know, it's been only around about 4 years or so. It's going to take a while to get to the level of, you know, Windows XP, SP2 was really the first secure version of Windows. And it took how long? 12 years, 15 years, something like that. So we're going to see some platform level issues, like with Siri, for example. Sorry about that. Hit the microphone. We're going to see some platform level issues for a while, and I think, they're of less concern to me than the app level issues, and I think this is an area where Apple has it all over Google or the Android platform, in the sense that, you know, Apple made a choice. It's sort of Eric Raymond's cathedral and bazaar thing, right? You have the cathedral of Apple, and all apps are signed by Apple, and presumably the original pin came from Steve Jobs himself or something like that. And everything on the platform is ultimately blessed through the App Store and it's screened and so forth. And I say blessed with the religious connotation of the cathedral here. And that's great. It's an interesting model that expands what an application platform is and what security means. In this case, security isn't just the code signing and the digital signatures. It's also the approval process. And I think in the Android case, they made a decision early on, either because it was too expensive, because it didn't seem like a good business model for them, or philosophically, they wanted to be quote-unquote open. And so they made it easier, quite easy for developers to sideload their own apps, made it easy for many app stores to exist, you know, opened it up for the carriers. I mean, this is a big part of Google's business model, Android, is to make it very carrier-friendly. So you've got Pandora's box. It is the bazaar. And I think we're going to see a situation where iOS becomes the Mac from the standpoint of being a relatively secure oasis, you know, tranquil, nice neighborhood, not very crowded, white picket fences, safe for kids, and Android, which is going to be a lot more like Windows, you know, Wild West problems, malware of different types. Android will get better, but I think those core differences will probably remain for a while until they go to a cathedral-type model, and I don't see that really happening.
Do you think enterprises are going to have to deal with multiple platforms, or do you think one platform may win out across the enterprise?
We're going to see multiple. I mean, the bring-your-own-device, which is one of my predictions, tune into my podcast, Memory Security, next week, but it is this idea that bring-your-own-device has won, right? These devices, when you think about it, the capital schedule for companies is 3 years. That's how long it takes you to depreciate an asset. If it took you 3 years to depreciate a phone, your employees would revolt. So they're going to bring their own to work. I mean, right. That's just, it's like jewelry, right? We're not going to tell you how to dress unless you work in an industry where you have a uniform or anything like that. And so people are going to bring their own gear to work. And so we're in this world where that's just a fact of life. And so the fleet approach, you know, where you buy the same brand of BlackBerry for every employee, like it's, you know, like a rental car company buys Tauruses, you know, it's done. It's not coming back. And I think that it's an opportunity and it's scary all at the same time. So glass half empty, glass half full.
Mm-hmm. And finally, a recent conversation I had with James Line of Sophos. Like many experts, James believes that attackers are going to be soon really turning to mobile devices in greater numbers.
Yeah, it's hard to generalize across all the different platforms because they're all so very different in their attack vectors and their models. But if we kind of rise above that for a minute before we get into some specifics, the malware and attacks that we have seen on these platforms, and interesting to note, they've been far more numerous than years previous. I feel like we're at the beginning of a wave. You know, I see it coming. Are very 1990s. They're, you know, basic, pretty easy to detect, poisoned applications that are sideloaded with very, very basic payloads. It's nothing like the malware that you see on the PC. Now, the assumption might be mobiles are, you know, eminently secure, and it's hard to write stuff for these platforms, so we don't need to worry about it, which is a little false. Actually, what I see at the moment is the bad guys testing the boundaries, you know, doing some basics, figuring out if it works, figuring out what they can do, mm-hmm. And I think the reason it hasn't happened is these devices, mobiles and tablets, haven't yet become the high value target that the PC is. We're really, really close. You know, over 2011, I saw so many more companies adopting these devices for more than just email, you know, moving into allowing access to the CRM, allowing access to the corporate network. You know, as that increases and these devices become more integrated into business, perhaps even for some users, replace their laptop, I think we're going to see much more activity from the bad guys. So, you know, I still see it coming. I think we're at the beginning of the wave, but I suspect we haven't seen that as a result of the bad guys not latching onto it as a high-value target yet.
You mentioned that businesses are looking for technologies to address some of these issues, some of these mobile issues. What are they looking for? What's being offered to them at this point?
So it's interesting. A lot of businesses start off with, I want, you know, antivirus and this comprehensive stack for mobile devices like I have for the PC.
Right.
And then very quickly you do the attack vector analysis and the research of what's actually available, and you end up in a much more pragmatic, smaller scoped set of features. Okay. Most issues with mobile devices right now are data loss issues. You know, you go for a few drinks, you're drunk driving your BlackBerry, and you leave it unlocked in the taxi. You know, there's been a few stories like that. In the UK, we like to joke about ministers on trains and how they love to leave things unlocked. You know, so most of it's basic things like password security and lockout, use of encryption.
These are standard features now in a lot of mobile security suites.
Right, absolutely. You know, you look at the iPhone, Android, you know, even Windows Phone 7. You know, password, setting a decent password. It's amazing how many people still think you can only have a PIN on the iPhone as well, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, those things are inbuilt capabilities of the device. Lots of the attacks that a targeted attacker could do, I do a demonstration where I use a jailbreaking vulnerability to hit an iPad without the user's awareness and then backdoor in and steal data off the device. Lots of those things are caused by failure in patching, caused by failure to turn on SSL when accessing your email account. Mm-hmm. You know, the issues are basically configuration problems. And security right now for mobile devices is about using the capabilities of the device effectively and having a tool to enforce the policy you've written in paperwork. So good password, use SSL when accessing email, you know, configure the VPN, or web security scanning, the usual policy controls if you need them, password lockout. With most of these devices, you're in an acceptable point of security for many, many use cases. That's likely to change, as we've discussed, as the bad guys focus on it more. But right now, it's really about those basic points of control.
So it's about using the capabilities of the device effectively. When are we going to... Are we going to be seeing the same kinds of security technologies running in the background on mobile phones, on an Android device? Right now, we know the Apple device, Apple iOS is a closed ecosystem, but Android devices are somewhat open.
Yeah, so I think we're going to see quite fast reform of the technologies in this area, moving much more towards, you know, active protection, shall we say.
Okay.
Now, I think it would be a mistake, as many do, to shoehorn traditional PC-based protection into the mobile world and say that's how we should do it. You know, I don't think we need antivirus like on a PC on a mobile device. I think you've got to start from scratch. We might call it antivirus just because people know to buy that. You know, it might be a good marketing thing,
right.
But the actual implementation is likely to be very different.
Okay.
Because you look at these devices, you know, without breaking down every one of them individually, they've got sandboxing capabilities and isolation. They've got permission systems that talk about whether the application should be able to access your location, your personal information, your SMS messages, rather than esoteric, bizarre registry keys that no one understands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are significant advances in security architecture and usability over the PC. They're examples of these platforms applying some lessons learned from, you know, Microsoft's early challenges, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a huge opportunity for security vendors to use and manage those capabilities to positive effect to reduce malware. That said, you know, I do think we're going to end up with security services, you know, looking for malicious code, probably much more playing the role of arbiter of the walled garden integrated with the OS features rather than the sole line of defense, which is much more what antivirus can often be in the PC world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's not shoehorn it in, but I definitely think we're going to see those services.
Well, that does it for this special edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. You can check out our Ion Spotlight series at searchsecurity.com's homepage. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.